Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Friday, February 25th, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. It's Friday already. This has been one of the most intense whirlwind weeks we've ever had. Lisa was saying the other day that we, in a matter of 1 week, we've done like 11 different interviews. And they just seem to all be running together now. We want to thank Black Off Radio, which we appeared on last night.
Right, with Len Osanek and Anita Langley. It was intense, and it was a whirlwind.
Yeah, and all our upcoming interviews are right on the Wing TV homepage. Mm-hmm. So you can take a look at that. Also, we'd like to thank the American Free Press once again for their review. We're going to post that on our site on Monday.
I also want to thank Michael Langston, who has diligently recorded and copied every single interview that we've been doing and sent it to us. So, Michael, thank you so much.
Right. Also, we have our thumbs up, thumbs down column on the Wing TV homepage, which you can link to. We get a lot of responses from these, some good, some bad. But they seem to be a good thumbnail sketch of what's been going on in this crazy world week by week. And last but not least, we want to tell you about our guests coming up next week. We have Tom Fairley, who's the author of a book called
The Bishop's Secret.
And also Eric Huffschmidt on Tuesday, Kurt Nimmo on Wednesday, Boston University Professor Larry Kotlikoff on Thursday, and Brigadier General Ben Parton on Friday. Mm-hmm. Then the week after that, we start 9/11 on Trial,
right. The
video version of the book. So we're all looking forward to that. Now, our guest today is a gentleman who we've interviewed more than any other person ever. We've interviewed him twice in print, once on our old radio show.
And he's also our good friend.
Right, and numerous times on Wing TV. He's the author of America's Autopsy Report, also The Day America Died, which is a fantastic book, and last but not least, The Perfect Enemy, with maybe one of the best covers ever put on the cover of a book. And a couple weeks ago, John made some great waves with this article called The Second Wave. And this has become kind of like the unofficial guide now for the second wave of 9/11 activists. And I know it was spread everywhere on the Internet. So, John, welcome to Wing TV.
Hey, John.
Hi, Victor. Hi, Lisa. Hey, first of all, I want to say that I am honored to be on such a great list of people that you've had. You've interviewed everybody important. And I noticed you mentioned Nimmo's name coming up.
Uh-huh.
Did you see what he did last week?
No.
He almost single-handedly saved Uruknet, which is one of the best sites on the web. Uruknet.info.
Okay.
And Google, under some Zionist pressure, had dropped them from their search engine.
Wow.
And Nimmo jumped right on it and got them to put it back.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, I know we were looking very much forward to having him on his show, and his writing seemed to be everywhere. So, you know, you go to one site, another site, and there he is popping up again.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be a very interesting conversation. So,
yeah.
John, let's start talking about this article, The Second Wave, and it really seemed to rejuvenate a lot of people. And there's one point you made in this article where you said, we have to keep things simple. We have to go back to the basics. And I know a couple nights ago we were on Wisconsin Public Radio, and Professor Jim Fetzer was on the show along with us, and he said in regard to the World Trade Center tower collapse, the physics of this is very simple. It's very elementary. Yet, we still have this bells and whistle crowd that wants to make everything complicated. They want to have very far-reaching, you know, theses or ideas. Why do they want to make things so complicated?
Well, I think it's definitely a dilemma, because when you make assertions like we do that certain things happen, a lot of people, some well-meaning and some not, say, let me see your footnote, or let me see your reference. And then when you get into that, as we both know, the footnotes can often take up more space than the actual piece that you've written.
Well, what I was talking about instead was with their theories about 9/11, they really want to get into the bells and whistle aspect of it, you know? Why do you think that is, when we have proof already about the towers?
Mm-hmm.
We've all had difficulty making our point. about the collapse of the towers. And I have to point out that if the second wave had a lot of legs as some kind of galvanizing event, it's because of the book that you did and the clarity that you established in spelling out in simple terms the main components that people need to comprehend when they're going to determine whether or not the towers were demolished.
Right.
And in other descriptions and explanations of that, because people have said, where's the proof, you're required to use a footnote, and this requires some knowledge of engineering, mm-hmm. and it's easy for me to get lost, and it's easy for most people to get lost. So it's a dilemma that has to be worked through, because when you state it simply, people say, where's your footnote, where's your evidence?
Yeah.
And when you provide the evidence, it puts a lot of people to sleep.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm so enthusiastic about your book, is that it's just a simple narrative that takes people through with kind of everyday examples and pointing out the five or six things that have to click in your mind. And once those things do click, once you understand the words, then there's no way you can go back to believing those towers fell because
right.
the planes hit
exactly.
them.
What I just found out a few minutes before we did the show, John, was that this book has now reached the Pentagon. Military brass at the Pentagon were given the book. The attorney to a general there has the book, and they've been looking at our website. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens now, but I do think this is progress in a way.
Well, I hope they find more pieces of your book at the Pentagon than they did of the plane.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll reconstruct it in a hangar.
That's a good point. Now, John, a few weeks ago we heard a couple interviews of yours, and you said that you think maybe up to 70% of people in the 9/11 field aren't what they appear to be. And even though we are making progress, we spoke about a week or so ago on the phone, and you said to me, you said, you know what, this thing is still a circus, the alternative research field and the 9/11 crowd and whatever. And do you still stand by that? Do you think that there's quite a number of people in this 9/11 research field that aren't what they're cracked up to be?
Well, I've thought a lot about it, and I've really scrutinized my own feelings about some people who may not agree with what I feel, and I try to distinguish between if they just disagree with me or if they're disagreeing with me for another purpose. And really the classic example of that is Mark Rabinowitz's website, oilempire.us,
uh-huh.
mm-hmm. which is a site that I happen to like. But I agree with about half of the stuff that's on it, but the other half I vehemently disagree with.
Yeah.
And this is the nature of disinformation. One of the classic examples is a fellow named Stu Webb.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Who I'm sure I'll get in trouble for even bringing his name up. But 75% of the time he sounds exactly like me. And the other 25% of the time, he just goes apocalyptic on
right.
everybody.
Oh, yeah.
and the net result is that most people don't believe a thing he says,
right.
even though he puts out valuable information. By putting in this other harebrained stuff, he delegitimizes everything that he says.
Yeah.
So disinformation can be a very difficult thing to discern.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start throwing these charges around, people who are well-meaning can get hurt. But on the other hand, to accept things like the Web Fairy's holograms and J-Han's missiles, I think, is a guaranteed way to destroy the 9/11 skeptics movement.
We brought up Kyle Hens' name on the show the other day, and he, you know, the reason that he hasn't been pushing forward a lot of this truth that's out there is because he told us anyway, the American people aren't ready. Yet, in interview after interview we've been doing on shows where people call in, the public calls into these shows, most of them are so phenomenally receptive to what we have to say, and it just totally shoots Hens right out of the water. So what do you think about the Americans' receptiveness to this information? Are they ready? Are they not ready? What?
Well, in response to Hans, I would say, are the American people ready to accept the fact that America caused World Wars I and II? That the Bush family was heavily involved in the assassination of JFK?
Right.
It isn't a matter of being ready. I get this, too, and especially in regards to a lot of the new people I've been talking to on the second wave level. When I try to bring up the Zionist issue, they say, oh, we can't talk about that because we'll turn people off. And my only response to that is the reason that the 911 puzzle is not solved is because of everyone's unwillingness to talk about the Zionist influence in the White House and the media and
point.
On most other levels. And until we address that issue, 911 is not going to be
right.
solved.
And the question is, if we're not ready to hear the truth, what are we ready for? More lies?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, John, in your second wave article, I'm holding this up again, and anyone that wants to read this article and any other by John, you can go to johnkaminsky.com.
Mm-hmm.
He has all his essays there. His books are available. And it's a great site to go, especially if you're a part of this second wave and you want to get some insights that are beyond what most other people give. But I got an email from somebody yesterday, and they said, you guys spend too much time on 9/11. Why do you focus so much on that? But you point out in your article, and this is such a valid point, is you say 9/11 is ground zero.
Mm-hmm.
From 9/11, everything else that's currently going on in our world results from that. So extrapolate a little bit about that.
Well, like I've said, 9/11 is the key to American history, both past and future. Because when you reach that terrible point, when you realize that our government was willing to knock down those buildings for devious purposes and kill all those people, you get the cold chill on the back of your neck and you realize they're willing to kill anybody for just about anything.
That's right.
John, have you heard anybody talking about the use of white phosphorus, perhaps, at the World Trade Center? Because that can melt steel. I was just talking to a former Marine today, and he was telling us that back in Vietnam they were using this stuff. It comes in a canister, and it can eat through your hand if you get any on your skin. I mean, it can eat a hole right through you, and it can melt steel, he says.
Well, I'm not a pyrotechnic expert, but the substance I've heard most often mentioned is thermite,
yeah.
which I think is a component
mm-hmm.
of C4.
Yeah.
And one of the great investigative points that has not been pursued about the World Trade Center is why were these boiling heaps of molten metal sizzling at the World Trade Center for 2 weeks or more
right.
after the event? And where did they come from? They certainly didn't come from the airplanes.
Right.
Yeah, and these reached to reach a point of molten steel to liquefy like that takes a temperature of like 5,300 degrees or something. That certainly didn't resolve from jet fuel fires that burned out in 2 minutes. Now,
yeah, that was a point you made very clearly in your book.
Yeah. Now, John, when we look at this second wave, the first thing we have to do is go back to the first wave. And as anyone who's read this book knows, there are numbers and numbers of fantastic authors and researchers
mm-hmm.
that I quoted in this book. We've had almost every one of them on this show,
mm-hmm.
and we can't thank all of them enough, because if it wasn't for this first wave of researchers, there certainly wouldn't be a second.
Correct.
But we
right.
have to look, John, at the mistakes we made in the first wave, and I'm going to make a quick statement and let you follow up on it, is I think the two biggest mistakes we made in the first wave was putting Mike Rupert and Kyle Hentz out at the forefront, whether they were self-appointed or otherwise, to go out there and become these unofficial or official spokesmen for 9/11.
I think they were self-appointed.
Yeah. Now, what do you think the biggest mistakes we made in the first wave were?
Well, that's probably a good point, and I don't know if they were self-appointed or not. They claim to be self-appointed, but
uh-huh.
each one of them has interesting baggage and connections. It probably is those two people and a couple of others that I was thinking of when I made that statement, that if there was such an elaborate cover-up in place on the specific aspects of the events of 9/11, it would make sense to be ready for the aftermath and have Pied Pipers
yeah.
arrayed to lead us in wrong directions. I remember what set off my first alarm bell with Mike Rupert was really early on, before the turn of the year in 2002, Mike Rupert went to New York and said Israel had nothing to do with it. And that just, like, blew the top of my head off.
And there's so much evidence contrary to that. How could he even make such a statement?
Exactly.
And, you know, I was just thinking before the show, and I told Victor, I said, gee, if they'll let Jeff Gannon, it's the White House briefings, me and you and Kaminsky should be able to get in there, too, pretty easy, huh?
What do you think?
Well, I don't think Mike Rupert is gay.
Now, to follow up on this, when we look at New York City, and I call it the New York City 9/11 cabal, and just think of these folks up there were actually serious, like many of these other 9/11 researchers. They could have tracked down the firefighters, NYPD, the rescue people, and especially the media. A lot of these people had access to the media, and there was absolutely nothing done, at least productive, in getting the word out about what really happened. What they really did, John, is just regurgitate what the mainstream media was feeding them.
Yeah, I've been talking to a lot of people about that. The thing is I've been talking to the people in Oklahoma City about that. It's really, studying Oklahoma City is kind of like studying 911, only with a smaller database and more intensely. And I asked, I was talking to Chris Emery and Charles Key last night.
Yeah.
And I asked them, how many people do you think are hardcore involved in trying to expose the government's lies in Oklahoma City? And they said about 30.
Uh-huh.
And that's in 10 years. Gee. But there are thousands of people who congratulate the people in this group for their courage, but they aren't willing to step forward because they're afraid they're going to lose their livelihood. And there's ample reason to fear that because we see it happening.
Yeah, you're right.
So people are terrified.
Recently, Pat Shannon put out an article about Terry Yakey. He was the first police officer on the scene at OKC. And we're supposed to believe Terry Yakey killed himself. He slashed both his forearms. He cut his jugular twice, managed to climb a fence, crawl 8,000 feet away from the site, and then shoot himself in the head. I mean, how plausible is this?
Well, according to the government, like you say, he slashed his throat, walked 2 miles, and shot himself. And they never found
the
weapon.
They don't even try to make it plausible.
Yeah.
Well, why aren't people up in arms about that? That's the real question. And I have always been very puzzled and distraught about the fact that people just try to cover their own butts.
Yeah.
And they let all this stuff happen without realizing that it's going to come to them if they continue to let it happen, and now we see it's all coming to us.
Yeah. Now, John, another topic we have to broach is the mainstream media. And some people dismiss them and say, oh, well, they just don't know this information and they're busy and so forth. But I say that this media, this mainstream media, is evil, purely evil for what they've done to us and all these cover-ups they're involved in. Tell us about the media in relationship to evil.
Well, Thomas Jefferson had similar things to say about it, but I'm a journalist. I've been in the newspaper business in small enterprises for pretty much 30 years.
Uh-huh.
And I always regarded a reporter's greatest enemy is his own publisher.
Right.
Because he limits what that reporter can do. And if the reporter finds something that he wants to talk about, a lot of times the publisher sits on it because it's inimical to his advertising priorities, his financial priorities. So one of the great mistakes in American culture is teaching people that media and journalism present the truth.
Right.
Because they don't.
Right.
Because it's totally poisoned by money.
Yeah.
And truth and news should go hand in hand. And so a big part of what the second wave should be about is joining those two, truth and news.
Well, I think people try to do that in their own way, but they keep running afoul of the major things that keep us from getting at the truth. They're afraid what their neighbors will think. They want to fit in. They want to tell the truth, but there comes a point in everyone's life where you have to decide between telling the truth and hurting yourself socially and financially, or going along with the crowd and profiting from the cover-up. And this is really This is not an American thing. This is a human thing.
Right. Well, John, I want to ask you one more question about the second wave. But while I'm holding up your books, again, tell everyone how they can find your website and your writings.
Oh, thanks, Victor. JohnKaminsky.com is where it all is. And you can buy them through PayPal. And the two books are compilations of my internet essays. And the Day America Died is the little booklet that I try to explain some of the major areas of 9-1-1, which I thought was the best one out there until yours came along, Victor.
Well, thanks, John. And, you know, I told you this about your book, John, The Perfect Enemy, before, but I said if there ever is book burnings in this country, say in 5 years down the line or whatever, I said one of the first books they're going to come for is The Perfect Enemy. This is a dangerous book, and everybody out there, you might not agree with everything John says, but he puts his neck on the line, and I'll tell you, this guy has balls the size of coconuts.
And you want to know something, John? The reason Victor's book is so good is because it incorporates the work of dozens of people work is so excellent.
Yeah, I believe this is all a team sport.
Absolutely.
And we need to feed each other, and nobody is going to accomplish this objective by themselves. And that the American people are in really big trouble now because there just aren't enough people willing to try to find out what the truth really is.
We need to start rowing together. We're all in the same boat.
Yeah. Okay, last question, John. If you could speak to every single member of this second wave of 9/11 activists, what would you tell them? What would you suggest they do for the future?
That's a tough one, Victor. People ask me that all the time, and my standard answer is to stand securely in your own truth and be an example to others, and you have to really do it one person at a time.
Right.
And then even after you have convinced a person of the truth of what you're saying, the chances are good that that person won't have enough personal courage to go out and spread the message.
And I want to say something about John. When he wrote this second wave article, which I'm going to hold up one last time, and he spread it around the internet, it caused a buzz like you wouldn't believe.
Yes.
And people went out there and started looking for this information. They started saying, you know what? Maybe he's right. And if every other one of us started doing that, spreading this information around and telling our neighbors, John's going up to people at the gas station, at the grocery store, whatever, he's talking about this. I know Lisa and myself do this every single day. We talk to people.
And remember one thing. Fear isn't the only thing that's contagious. Courage is courageous, too.
And John is very, very
that's
courageous.
Right.
Go to johnkaminsky.com. As always, we welcome him on Wing TV, one of our favorite people in the world. So go check out his writings. And John,
have a great weekend.
That's right.
Thanks.
A little inside Wing TV joke. So we'll be back on Monday. Everybody, enjoy your weekend. Check out the 9/11 site. We're going to update all the interviews we've been doing. And we'll see you on Monday. Keep your eyes open, folks. There's a lot going on.
Have a good one.
Thanks, guys.